Coffee. It's the fuel we rely on when we wake up, the casual drink we get on a work break, or a special treat for us when we need it most. Nothing beats a good cup of Joe, so why settle for a mediocre cup of coffee when you can have the very best? At Aeronautical Coffee Company, we roast our specialty grade coffee to order. Experience premium coffee that's as smooth as a buttery landing. So pick up a bag at aeronauticalcoffee.com and use code TPN at checkout for 10% off. Fuel up and take off with ACC. What up, network? It's I, Adam, again. Today I'm joined by John McFarland, also known as Slap from Bogey Dope. For those of you who are looking for that coveted guard or reserve gig, need some help figuring out what your next step is in the transition from active duty onto the great life of part-time military service and airline work or whatever else you want to do, John is a wealth of information. He and his team can lead you down that path. Also, they are starting a new service. Actually, it's not that new. It's been around a little bit now, and it's got phase one funding from the United States government to help out in finding the proper folks in the Guard and Reserve and streamlining that process of getting applications on file for those who want to be pilots, milrecruiter.com. So listen up close for those of you that are in that boat. And if you're not, this is a great thing to listen up to as well, because you will meet folks who are looking for that kind of help along the way, and you can be their North Star, their catalyst to get them where they want to be. So enjoy John and Maya's discussion all about Bogey Dope and Mill Recruiter. Maybe you'll get your own inspiration to start your gig and go get that funding from Uncle Sam helping you out along your way. All right, enjoy the show. John, what's up, man? It's been a few minutes since we've had a chance to talk. How's everything going in the Bogey Dope land?
Things are great. Things are moving. Things are building. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, I bet. You know, it's something we talk on, not only on this podcast, but just in the network on a whole, whether it's on the pro side, the Facebook side, all over the place. And I think the internet in general, it's a lot of stuff in regards to, you have the airline hiring that's going on, the industry at large over on the civilian side is just a conversation piece. On the military side, it's kind of, what has the military done wrong? What is the problems with the airplanes that they have? We all know the KC-46, F-35, like all that kind of stuff that's going on. What we don't talk a lot about is what's happening in the process of not only producing, but recruiting new pilots. And what are you guys seeing on the front of Guard, Reserve, active duty, to your knowledge base? What are you guys seeing as far as prospectus and current stats for what's going on out there in the hiring process of pilots or production of pilots?
Yeah. So for the longest time, I'd say, 6 to 9 years plus, the Air Force has been losing more pilots than they're gaining on there. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. The problem is probably getting significantly worse. Now that the airlines are hiring at a record rate on there. And so what we're seeing is that the Air Force has a couple different ways that they're trying to solve the problem, from what I can see anyway. And so typically what they're trying to do to solve it is by increasing production. And by increasing production, I mean try to shove more UPT candidates through pilot training to produce more pilots at that sort of young, inexperienced phase. The problem with that is they've come up with new ways of UPT 2.5, using virtual reality, using all these different syllabus and programs. And I think they've seen a certain level of success to the point they're going to continue to do that. But despite all their efforts, like probably billions of dollars or at least millions of dollars spent trying to solve that problem through that capacity, they're still losing pilots every year. So I think in 2022, they had a net loss of 250 more pilots than they gained through that. And so the other problem that they have is just retention. And so retention, the way that they are trying to sort of keep people in is by increasing bonuses. I think the latest active duty bonus that at least I know of is now up to $50,000, which is the highest it's ever been to my knowledge, which is great. But with airlines now signing, you know, 40% pay raises and hiring like crazy and upgrading super quick and stuff like that, that pay becomes less of an attractive factor to keep people in. And so now they need to sort of look at different ways of, well, what can we offer to a pilot to stay in for another 10 years after the active duty commitment that the airlines or civilian world can't provide? And I don't think they've found that solution quite yet. We have a couple of things that we're trying to offer up to them through our sister company called Mill Recruiter, which is basically, you know, for your community, think of it as airline apps or pilot credentials for the Guard or Reserve pilot. And the general idea there is we just make it easier to apply to the Guard and Reserve so we can retain some of that talent a little bit easier. So traditionally, if you're an active duty pilot and you are looking at potentially getting out and going to the airlines, you may still want to serve. You may still want to fly. But the problem is that in the traditional way of going to the Guard or Reserve is it's sort of a networking game. Who do you know? What squadrons do you know? You might have an in at one squadron that you might want to apply to. But if it doesn't work out at that specific squadron, or you just set your sights on one squadron and it doesn't work out, you sort of just give up, go do the airlines, and that's sort of it. And what we want to offer is a way to create one digital application, apply to as many squadrons as you can at once, the same time you're applying to airlines, and now open up different opportunities to continue to serve and continue to fly, and hopefully for the Air Force to retain that talent that they're otherwise losing at record rates right now.
I remember when this is back in 2018. So to get onto that piece real quick, I actually had an opportunity to work on the Aircrew Crisis Task Force. So which was oxymoronic in terminology and handled, in my opinion, not so well. And the reason I say that is when I got the first, I guess, interview, it was kind of email. Talking to one guy who's working on it, and it was a good deal for those of you out there that understand what I'm about to say. It was a 365 continuous order until basically they ran out of money. And for you Guard guys, it was type 10, type 10, article 10, whatever. Jeez, retired for a month and I still don't remember. And it was, so they're federalized orders. So it was a good deal. And it was work from home. Guy I talked to said, yeah, that's how it starts. And then you're going to start going to the Pentagon and you're going to be there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. And it's going to be awful. And it's not what it was cracked up to be. But the big thing was, is, and I, like you, felt like, man, I could really, like the way we're built into this ecosystem, how we started, especially with TPN, you with Bogeyed Open, the Mill Recruiter, you kind of get your hands and fingers in different places that you didn't realize you were going to be. And you start really having a pulse. Or at least you think you have a pulse on what's happening in your industry more so than other folks. So I felt, wow, I can really help with the retention piece. Being a Guard guy at the time, a guy who had essentially about 5 years left before he was going to retire, who's not on the flip side of it, thought, man, I think I know what my cohort is feeling like if they want to be retained in the Air Force. That's what I went in with my game plan. And the first thing they tell me is, yes, perfect. We want a guy like you. You're going to work on production. I'm like, I have never, the only production I've ever done is I flew the Tweet, the T1. I graduated pilot training and I never looked back at Vance Air Force Base and I will never. I said, how the hell do you think I'm going to help with pilot production? They're like, oh, you'll figure it out. I'm like, that's cool. But again, this is, so right here, you just came up with you just explained your retention problem to me. You put square pegs in round holes nonstop. And if you stop doing that, you will absolutely kill one of the behemoths out there that is causing you to have a retention issue. Like the old, we used to joke about it, the old McConnell Grand Forks swap. You had somebody who lived in Grand Forks, somebody who lived in McConnell, flew the same airplane, had family, friends, everything set in Grand Forks, family, friends, everything set in McConnell. So it would make all the sense in the world to, hey, you know what? Let's swap bases for them. Because they need breath. It's like, it's the same exact base with a few minor differences, just different locations. And I like you. I mean, yeah, I have a little bit more negative opinion of it, I guess. Not so much sour grapes, just I don't see it getting any better. And I guess I'm hopeful that guys like you can figure some of that stuff out. What are there things that you can talk about that you are working on that you know, or you know that are coming down the pipe? Because money only goes so far. Like you said, airlines, especially some of the profit sharing checks that are going to go out over the next 4 years, next year at least, are going to, for some guys, are going to dwarf what your bonus is. So in the active duty side, too, and it's quote unquote pensionable. So where you don't have that opportunity necessarily on the Air Force side. I mean, you do, but you're going to run out of how much you can put in really fast. So what are some of those things that you guys are either working on or seeing that may help with retention? Help is a very loose term.
Yeah. As far as what the Air Force is doing, to be honest, like, I don't see anything that they are doing right now that is trying to like do anything different to help retention other than throwing bonuses at it. And that sort of seems to be as far as their, ingenuity goes for as far as this goes. Like, we've actually tried to find people at the aircrew pilot task force or whatever it was called before. And from what we can tell, no one's ever told us that it's officially dismantled, but we can't find anyone that's still currently in that program to talk to and see if people are still working on any specific projects. And so what we're trying to offer up is the ability, like I said, to make it a little bit easier when someone is leaving active duty to find opportunities to continue to serve on the rated side of things. So if you can think about it, if you are leaving active duty and you're like, hey, all my friends are going to the airlines, and in your case, like, hey, they're going to Delta. Here's Delta's new contract. Holy smokes, that's a ton of money. Look at all this profit sharing. Look at all this money. Like, there's no way that the Air Force can compete with someone on the financial side. There's no way the Air Force can compete with someone on the quality of life side. Mm-hmm. What they can compete with is the desire for people to want to continue to serve. They want to continue to fly that airplane. They want to continue to have that camaraderie they have in the squadron, because the airlines simply can't offer that. Like, that's the unique part of the difference between the airlines and the military, and that the flying's cooler, the camaraderie and the culture is way better, but everything else is probably a little bit more of a negative compared to the airlines. And so what we want to do is create sort of that easy pathway where for the people that want to continue to serve, but want to do it in a more controlled way of, hey, I want to be part-time, I want to be full-time, I want to live in this state, and give them those options to leave active duty and do that. I think that's where the Air Force can really help out, is giving people control when these other opportunities are popping up. And so with MilRecruiter, all we've basically done is make it so the same way that you are applying to your airline apps when you're getting ready to get out, you can fill out one application, you can apply to multiple airlines or whatever the current configuration is for airline applications. But regardless, you're filling out only a couple applications to maximize your opportunities for these major airlines. And then you're likely to get picked up pretty quick because they're hiring so quickly right now. Compare that to the way that the Guard and Reserve has traditionally been, where there's 165 different flying units across the country. And so if you want to maximize your opportunity to continue to fly in the Guard Reserve, that means that that's 165 different applications that's tracking down different recruiters or pilot hiring boards, and they all post their applications in different places. They all require different things. Some of them may require you to rush the unit and visit the squadron and that kind of stuff. We'll multiply that by 165 different units. Not that you're going to apply to every single one of them, but it adds up pretty quick. And it's very time consuming and just daunting after a while, where people just sort of give up and there's like, well, screw it. I'm just going to go do the airline thing. It's easier, better for my family. It's more of a known quantity and sort of make that transition. With MilRecruiter, what we've basically done is just create a way of now creating one application, passing that out to any squadron you're interested in. You can pick and choose which squadrons you want that to be visible to, and hopefully increase your chances of continuing to serve and that kind of stuff. It's recently got the attention of the Air Force. So we got selected for AFWERX. SIBR, which stands for Small Business Innovation Research Contract, which basically means that they're giving us a little bit of money to go around the Air Force and see how many squadrons want to use it. Does Big Air Force want it? All that kind of good stuff. Currently, we've got about 80 different squadrons out of the 160. So about 50% of all Guard and Reserve squadrons are currently using it. We've got a database of about 3,500 applicants that are on there. And so we hope that providing something like this and seeing the use cases and the way that squadrons like to use it will not only make it more efficient for squadrons to collect and sort through applications, but also make it much easier for the applicant to continue to serve in a Guard or Reserve capacity, as opposed to just like completely walking away from their pilot training altogether. So one of the things that we try to emphasize to the leaders that we talk to is they can go spend $11 million to go train a new fighter pilot through UPT. You're going to get a brand new guy with no experience, and you just paid $11 million. You spent 2 years training him, or you can come up with some innovative ways to keep the talent of someone who has 12 years experience. We've already invested $60 million over the course of that 12 years and try to retain that talent, which is a much better return on your investment on there. And if there's going to be, you know, any upcoming war with China or Russia or whoever else, as you know, you want those experienced pilots. You don't want a brand new lieutenant going and leading your warship on night one of the war and that kind of stuff. And so I think they're starting to see that. I think we've gotten a lot of positive feedback, and it seems like it's something that they're taking notice of trying to find different solutions to a problem that's been around for a long time.
That's encouraging to hear from, because that's the way I like a grassroots bottom-up approach where, you know, I've had a lot of really bad commanders in my past, a couple of good ones. And the bottom line is, even the good ones, it is so challenging for them to do anything top-down, unless they just do not care at all about any of their career and don't care if they get absolutely blasted with a shotgun in the chest by the people on top, because they can only go so far before they're fired. And I've just seen it time and time again. I mean, we had a boss in my old unit who said, if you don't like it, there's the door. And that was to a bunch of very experienced folk. And it's like, you cannot produce your way out of this problem. You cannot make a experienced instructor pilot. I don't care what airframe it is. It doesn't matter. Like, if you don't have an experienced instructor pilot, you don't have one. And if you have a lieutenant who is got 100 hours, they're not going to be an experienced instructor pilot until far later in their career. You can't make that. And the other problem is, I don't know where this is on the rest of the Guard Reserve side, or active duty for that matter, but in the Guard, especially in the tanker side, it used to be, hey, you can go and get your hours in the desert. And then what would happen is, because the desert was going on, there was a lot of other opportunities for people to go fly and do stuff that was a little bit more breadth of experience, go flying business efforts, Cornets, flying all over the place, moving jets, yada, 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 working with TACC so you understand the system. Now, the only option is to go do that, is work out in the system of the TACC world. So everybody's fighting to get in there. And at a certain point, there's a lot to do, but there's only so many slots to do it within. So people aren't flying very much. So it's a lot of local sorties, which isn't bad necessarily for the tanker pilot. The problem is there's not enough. So there's not enough hours being earned every year by a pilot to go out and get upgrade quickly, whatever, yada, yada, yada. The other thing is I can speak for my old Guard unit, everybody's an airline pilot, like everybody. And I mean, the only people who aren't are the people who don't have the hours, or the people who've chosen the AGR route for their career, which is, hey, that's your decision. Not for me. Some guys, that's cool. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm glad they're happy doing it. We need those good guys to do it. Most of them are. The problem that I see is these young folk, I'm talking Guard Reserve babies, they hit their hour minimum, they're gone. I mean, why wait around? There's just no reason for it. And I think, to me, that's where the biggest issue is. So any commander that's out there that hears this and wants to come on this podcast and tell me some innovative ways that they're trying to do retention at a grassroots level, I would be happy to have you on, because I have not seen it in a lot of places. I've seen the hope, like the hope method of just saying, man, I hope I can make this cool enough to keep somebody here. But from what I'm seeing is, when you're running a squadron or an ops group to the point where it's like, okay, for a Guard unit, we're going to have 4 of our generation type exercises a year, and we're going to test constantly, and we're going to practice staying overnight and stuff like that. I don't know how you're going to keep people around. And I'm on a diatribe here, but you got me going. I can't help it. When you have prior enlisted, and I'm sure your squadron had this too, or has this in your Guard unit, you have more prior enlisted who fly airplanes in the Guard than you do on active duty. It's just kind of a natural thing, at least in the tanker side. When you have those prior enlisted folks, the majority of them are going to be can retire early, and they only do like their 10-year commitment. Now, I'm not saying a lot of them 10 years ago didn't retire, but 10 years ago, it didn't seem like any of them left early. I would say the lion's share of folks that I know I'm not saying that they are leaving early because they're not there yet, but the talk is when they hit their point, they don't see a reason to stay. Nowadays, it's the connection that I see, like for me personally, is I've only been out of it for a little while, but a lot of retired guys make an effort to stay and hang around with their friends anyways, and they don't, like, the camaraderie is still there, just not the day-to-day going into the guard unit stuff. I just don't see people wanting to stick around as long, especially when you have a guy like, you know, the AMC commander, Minahan, yelling about how he's going to go to war with China and all that nonsense. So from a level that shouldn't be said that. So to me, that's scaring or it's hindering the retention capability. So anybody out there with grassroots ideas, commanders, please, I would love to have you on the podcast and hear what you're doing. You can be anonymous. You can tell me you don't have to say any of your name, any of that stuff. We'd love to hear ideas because frankly, I haven't seen a lot of good ones. And I think a great one is, and it's basic, simple is always great. John figured it out. Mill recruiter, get people with some talent, retain them by moving them to the Guard and Reserve easily or more easily than has been done in the past. Now, how do you keep them there? Because we, in my guard unit, we lost three or four folks after they moved over to the guard, were deployed a lot, and they're like, this is stupid. I'm out of here. I don't want to fly airplanes for, this is the same thing that was active duty. So maybe it's just my old unit. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But I like to see that that's where it's going. All right. I just monopolize the conversation, which I tend to do.
No, that's good. I think there's part of it too, of being a transition back to a very traditional part-time force in the Guard and Reserve. If you look back to the last 20 years, the majority of that time, not that I wasn't a part-time force before, but the airlines weren't hiring. So people wanted to stick around. They wanted those orders to have sort of that safety net if needed. Mm-hmm. But the airline industry sucked. Like the pay wasn't great. The quality of life wasn't great. The movement wasn't great. And then things started to pick up quite a bit starting like 2014 and all the way up to like really get up to steam rip until, you know, COVID started. And then COVID sort of brought everyone back of like, holy crap, I like having the DOD as this sort of safety blanket. And so it masked a lot of the problems that the DOD was dealing with as far as pilot retention, because everyone still needed a job, and people that were on active duty were maybe afraid to leave to go to the airlines because none of the airlines were hiring. They seemed like they were going to go bankrupt and all that kind of stuff. And so now starting 2021 or 22 or whenever it was that airlines started hiring again, and they're hiring like crazy. I think we're just at this like sort of inflection point of, hey, this is now going back to the traditional model that was originally designed for the Guard and Reserve of, these are going to be citizen soldiers, essentially, where their civilian career needs to be looked at as like, this is their primary, moneymaker for their family. This is priority one for them. And then the way that we can keep them in the military to continue to serve is by making it as flexible as possible for them to stay in and serve and that kind of stuff. And so it's, again, people aren't sticking around for the money. They're not sticking around for much more the military offers other than the desire to serve and the desire to be around that culture. But as soon as you start making that painful, more painful than it needs to be, people are going to bounce just because we're in a unique time that we haven't seen in the last two decades where life on the outside is like magnitudes better than life on the inside, just based on pay, quality of life, schedule, kind of thing. So you've got to maximize those things that keep people around, of the type of flying, of the culture kind of stuff, and not make those aspects painful, because once you lose those, like, then it's going to be really, really hard to make people, you know, keep coming in week after week when they're losing money compared to what they could make elsewhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. What do we always talk about on the airline side? Like this last contract, people, hey, pay rates are important, money is important, but a lot of people were talking quality of life. Didn't matter what airline you were, your negotiating team was working with. And I think there was some pretty good gets across the board. There's always room for improvements, right? I mean, that's always the case. But the reality is people were more concerned about quality of life stuff. And they know that in years past that those contractual items were sold down the river to save a buck or two and to keep them quote unquote employed. In the reality, nobody really knows if that's the case or not, right? We can postulate all we want. Well, maybe this was the case, but we don't really know. What we do know is in the military is we can look back and there's a 20-year period where we were really busy doing essentially one thing, and it was occupying a lot of our time over in Southwest Asia. The thing was, is things kept there was still a lot of stuff going on back home. Specifically, I can speak for the AMC world, and they were really they're very busy. And once that it's these cycles, like there's a slowdown after the Cold War and the 90s and things. I remember getting to my active duty unit, and there were still guys who sat like on alert for a strategic command, and they would talk about how bad they had it. And I'm like, dude, you would sit alert for 30 days and your family would be able to come by, but you had like 1 week on, 1 week off. I'm like, that was bad. I deployed 210 out of 230 days. I was like, that sucked. Like, that was no fun. And I think it was like, whoa, what a kill to go do something like that. I'm like, well, then have at it, man. Why aren't you doing it now? Like, you're not deploying. So I think there's going to be, at least this is my hope. You know, I guess I'm a glass half full guy when it comes to this stuff. I hope that there's going to be this slow, not deterioration, but just letting go of that pass by the commanders going, you know what? We don't always need to be super busy. We can bust our ass in a different way. Like, we can work really hard to accomplish things, but it doesn't necessarily need to be ridiculous or painful. Like, there's fun stuff that we can do that's hard work. Like, for one thing that I always like to do is getting out and doing civic outreach stuff, getting in touch with not only the community, but working with like the pro sports teams, kind of building everything together to have like this really cool environment for not only the people that work at the Guard, but people who are interested in joining the Guard and making it look like, hey, these guys are cool kids on the block and I want to be part of that. And that was fun. It was it's hard work, but it was a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that kind of stuff comes back and we get to see it. So not come back, it evolves, because there is no going back to a lot of the ways things are done. It's just not going to happen. There's not the money, there's not the resources, but to move in that direction. And I think a mill recruiter is something that can bring over that talent from our folks in active duty who want to go live in a certain spot or fly a certain airplane, do a certain mission, and will invest 10, 15 years in that community. They're going to care about that community more than somebody who's there for, you know, 3 years and off they go. Like, I'm not saying they don't care, but they just, the vested interest isn't as tight. So how can an individual like Adam's interested in going from active duty to the Guard? Where do I go to find this mill recruiter portal of wisdom and all that stuff? And what's on it?
So just go to millrecruiter.com, sort of like ZipRecruiter, but Mill Recruiter on it. And you'll see some information. We have a lot of tutorial videos of how the application process works and what it looks like. It's completely free for all applicants, completely free for squadrons to use. And the general idea is that if you want to apply, you click sign up, you fill out a quick registration form, and then you start putting in your data. And it's just asking for the standard stuff that you would expect any squadron to care about. So for a UPT applicant, it's going to ask for things like your AFOQT scores, your PIXM score, your any civilian flight time you have, if you're already in the military or not, and college transcripts, those kind of things. And then at the end of it, you get to pick and choose which squadrons you want that application to be visible to. And then once you pick that squadron, any additional documents that specific squadron cares about, you can attach that only that squadron will see. So that might be like your resume, cover letter. If they ask like a specific questionnaire they want you to fill out, that's where all those documents sort of get added at the end. And then you can update your application throughout the year. So it's always active and maintain sort of awareness of which squadrons you're applying to and all that good stuff. Same basic thing on the rated side. So if you're coming from active duty, you just select that you're a rated applicant as opposed to UPT applicant. And now the questions are just a little bit different. So now it's going to be more of, hey, what squadrons were you in before? Which aircraft have you flown? Which aircraft are you currently flying? What's your data commission, data rank, that kind of stuff that squadrons might care about so they can hire the right year groups and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Makes it really easy then for the squadrons to see a up-to-date list of who's interested, who might be willing to get out 2 years from now, like when you're available, whether that's 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now. You can start that process way early so squadrons can now start forecasting everything. And it makes it easy for them to also find people that have had, you know, former experience in your aircraft, not just current experience. So for example, let's say someone's a current UBT instructor flying white jets or flying T6s or whatever the case is, but they were previously a C-17 IP. Well, it's going to be really easy to track down anyone on your application list of someone that has C-17 experience, if that's specifically what you're looking for, and that kind of stuff. So it's super intuitive. At least we try to make it that way, but we're always looking for feedback and ways of making it better. But we make it so you can create one core application, pick as many squadrons as you want that application to be visible to, add any additional attachments that those specific squadrons you're applying to care about. And then you just sort of sit back and wait for someone hopefully to give you a call. And obviously there's other things you can do to boost your chances beyond just applying, but that's essentially what MilRecruiter helps out with. The other thing that we've recently done is, this is probably no surprise for anyone here, but the Air Force is terrible about sending out information or making it easy to find information. And so the Air Force Reserve Command in particular has found that particularly frustrating, where they can't put their UPT information that they want to get out on Air Force websites. They can't get a hold of the right PA people just to post information from an official source from the Air Force, which there's a lot to unpack there. That's just describes the Air Force as a whole of how inefficient it is at so many things. And so we've basically given them access to the site to post information that they care about, official Air Force Reserve Command information about joining UFT, so undergraduate flight training, which encompasses more than just pilots, be like CISOs and everything like that too. But if someone's interested in doing that, we are helping sort of disseminate that information out there to make it sort of this one-stop shop of, this is where you can find out how to apply, but this is also where you can apply on there, as opposed to spending hours doing Google searches, trying to talk to a recruiter that doesn't know what he's talking about because he's never done, you know, pilot sessions or anything like that. And so anyway, the whole process sort of sucks as it is right now. We're just trying to make it better by doing some pretty simple, intuitive ways of consolidating information and then applying to as many squadrons as you can to maximize your chances.
Yeah, I love that, because I remember when I was going through this, I think I emailed or contacted something like, I don't know, I think it was something like 37 different units on my own. And mind you, this is like 2005, so there was no such thing as a global internet between the Guard, Reserve, and active duty. There was active duty, and then there was some other dark web that the Guard and Reserve were on that you had no access to. So it was go on baseops.net, jobs that were open, which some of them were complete BS. And then you'd email somebody with the phone. And then I remember I would get phone calls like from C-130 units. They're like, hey, can you be in training in 2 weeks? Because they were losing everybody. They were all coming off of 2 years of activation, getting just absolutely kicked in the nuts for 2 years. So people were quitting left and right. I had no idea. And you couldn't research any of these units. It just said, hey, come to Charleston, West Virginia. It's a great place to live. Like, I had no idea what was going on at any one of these places. And one of the things that I did notice is when I did that too, I also applied to some Naval Reserve. And I got no real traction until later on. Like, it was funny, like a year later, I got a phone call from VR-57 in San Diego. Hey, are you still interested? I was like, no, I already got in a reserve unit. I was like, if you had called me a year ago, I would have been living in San Diego 100%. But oh well, didn't happen. Everything worked out fine in my life. That's what my next question was. Are you guys moving? I know that the way AFWERX works is you're Air Force centric right now, but are you looking at with Navy, Department of the Navy, Coast Guard, Marine, or Army, all that stuff too, as well down the line to help out that process and seeing if you can consolidate everybody in there? Or is that just too big of a mountain to climb?
Well, I mean, obviously, from a business standpoint, we'd love to expand as much as we can to be that central place. And I think the way that the AppWorks processor works, right now in about 2 months, we have to submit an application for our phase two proposal. So there's three different phases, phase one, phase two, phase three. We've been selected for a phase one. There's about 4,000 companies that applied for a phase one. It's an open topic solicitation, meaning that you could apply for anything. You could show drones, weapons, cleaning supplies, in our case, software. And they selected about 5%. So about 200-ish companies got selected for the phase one. That phase one is all about going out and like sort of pitching your product to the Air Force to see if you can find a quote unquote customer. Customer is, hey, who is the biggest organization that would be interested in utilizing your product and service? And for us, we did things a little bit backwards than what they maybe typically do, in the sense that a lot of times the phase ones are just ideas that you just go pitch to somebody. Hey, is this something you'd like to have? We use this on a civilian world. We can potentially make an Air Force version. Would you like to do this? And so there's no like prototype. You're just sort of pitching an idea about something for us. And this is maybe naive on our part. Through Bogeydope, we recognized that as we were working with a lot of clients, like the processes is super inefficient. And so we started creating this application portal before we really knew how we were going to monetize it, how we were going to try and get a contract. And so the fact that we had a beta version that we threw out to the public about last year, just to get some tests on it, see what people's feedback was. We were expecting to get maybe 5 or 10 squadrons to maybe give it a shot, maybe 100 or 200 applicants to try it out. We'd get some feedback, we'd be able to iterate, and then we could go pitch the idea to the Air Force. Well, that sort of turned into organically turning into now over 80 squadrons, 3,500 applicants on there without us advertising, without us doing anything to really pitch it. It was just one of those things where squadrons are frustrated with the inefficient process that is out there. Applicants are frustrated with the inefficient process that's out there. So it just sort of, I think, struck a nerve of a better way of doing things. And so now that it's starting to get the attention of hopefully some people in high places, we are starting our application for our phase two part of this contract. And that phase two is more of like, hey, here's a couple years worth of funding to go build out all the features these squadrons want. Because we get a lot of feedback from squadrons. Hey, we would like to have this feature in the tanker community. We'd like to have this feature in the fighter community. And we want to build all those things in. We just need funding to go out and do that. And so, so long way of answering your easy question, but part of that solicitation is going and finding a customer and then recognizing what they want to build out in that 2 year span. Yeah. And so we're sort of, I wouldn't say limited to what their creativity is, but if we have a contract or a customer is the Air Force Reserve Command, then for this particular contract, it's going to be a little bit Air Force Reserve Command centric of looking for what features they want specifically there. If it's Air National Guard, National Guard Bureau, then we would sort of tailor it more towards that. But ultimately, it's going to help both organizations since they're very similar. But for the long-term vision of it, once we get, I think, the Air Force contract, which we're hoping to find out early 2024, if that ends up being the case, that now opens the doors for other branches. And the most logical next branch to go to would be the Army, since Army has National Guard, Army has Reserve, similar to the Air Force. But their application process, for the little that I know about it, is even more efficient than the Air Force, which is crazy to believe. But they do things a little bit different, and it is incredibly difficult to find information, incredibly difficult to apply. They have way fewer applicants, even though they have more slots available. So they sort of need an easier way to get applicants in there, but they don't have any good solutions for that. So I think the next logical step beyond the Air Force is to start pursuing Army stuff. And then within those two branches, I think we can expand out a lot more than just pilots. So think of any air crew, enlisted air crew is something that the Air Force Reserve Command is certainly interested in making that sort of a centralized place. So now as a squadron, you can post jobs for pilots, WISOs, CISOs, enlisted loadmasters, boom operators. You can have all that in one sort of stop shop on there, and then hopefully we can make it for the Army as well. Beyond that, we've talked to a few civilian companies where now if we can expand this thing to tie into civilian applications, now you can create a single application that potentially connects to either major airline hubs or other sort of lower tier airline, not airline, but aviation jobs, where now you can create one application. That one application gives you the opportunity to update your Delta application or Southwest or FedEx application just through an API, which connects to another website. But it could also update jobs for getting a CFI. And while you're doing that, you also have the opportunity now, hey, click a button, you can apply to the military at the same time. And so the idea is in this airline or aviation industry that is desperate for pilots, there is way more demand than there is supply right now. How can we make a one-stop shop where you can apply to serve in the Army or Air Force, you can get your CFI job or initial regional job, or you could update your major airline app all with the same application using the same software. So that's a little bit in the future, but we think if we get some of that initial seed funding on this next contract, it'll open up a lot of those opportunities to hopefully make the whole process much more unified and easier for anyone to apply to any of those different tier jobs along the way.
I like seamless transitions, man. It's easy. I love them in podcasts too. So next time we're on here though, I think we'll just have to sit back and talk some stories about F-15 flying. I mean, I can talk about a tanker here. I turned left a lot, but like, instead of talking businessy stuff and all the, and things that people really want to know, we'll just talk about what we want to talk about, maybe baseball or Deion Sanders and Florida State. For those of you who are not, can't see it, John's got a nice Seminoles logo back there, and we were just talking about primetime, which will date this podcast because he's killing it with the Buffaloes, and Bogey Dope's killing it too. Mill Recruiter's about to start crushing it. If we can get everybody on board with that and trying to figure out the easiest way for them to get to where they want to be, which is what TPN's been always about, paying it forward and continually doing that march through your career, and we want to help John Bogey Dope and Mill Recruiter get all of our bros and sisses out there to be able to find what they want to do, whatever that path might be, whether you're pilot, non-pilot, officer enlisted, warrant officer, somewhere in the middle too someday, and then moving through, because I can think of a lot of people who could have used this service way back when we were starting out and up until now, and I think this would greatly help a lot of people, not only on the actual getting the job side, but on the other side too, because it is a cluster in the world of the HR, if you will, by a bunch of non-HR pilots trying to run it. And we're not experts at that. This will help that quite a bit. I'm excited to see what you guys do. Excited to check back in as time goes on and see where we're at, not only with the status of the military and how retention's gotten better, hopefully, but also the status of Mill Recruiter and what we're doing to make lives easier for those folks out there who are trying to go continue their service or start their service, no matter where that is. If they need to get a hold of you, John, or want to get a hold of you directly, or are interested in Bogey Dope and looking at getting into the world of Guard Reserve, aviation, and then beyond, what's the easiest way for them to do that?
So we have two different websites now based on whatever you're interested in. So bogeydope.com, that's mainly there to give you some information. It has a little community where people can help you out, sort of answer your questions and help you join on whatever capacity you want to. If you want to get a hold of me there specifically, it's just john@bogeydope, bogeydope.com. And then Mill Recruiter, what we talked about here, the application portal, it's just millrecruiter.com, and then john@millrecruiter.
Well, that's easy, folks. And then as always, if you guys want to reach out to Matt or I, got questions, comments, concerns, complaints, critiques, or other for the podcast or beyond, hey guys at thepilotnetwork.com. We try to answer everything that we get. We try to answer pretty quickly. You can hit us up on all the socials. We're out there. Just take a look. And of course, as always, keep the shiny side up and the greasy side down. Fly safe, everybody.